you can take it from me. Why don't you stay and maybe join in the fun now? The show has begun.
Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with June Whitfield, Wallace Eaton, and the Keynotes, all inviting you to... Thank you for that spontaneous applause. This week, ladies and gentlemen, we have good news for those of you who are gory-minded. We have secured first radio rights of a new book of memoirs by a Harley Street surgeon.
It's called Cut and Come Again. Stand by for a sample chapter.
Sometimes we Harley Street chaps run up against a case which makes us realize how little we specialists really know. With me, it happens about 8 times a day. But the most startling example was a patient I had last January. A young man, David Chalmers. I had examined him, and he stood now, buttoning up his shirt and looking at me anxiously.
Well, Doctor?
Very well, thank you, yes. Now that I'm laying off the gin a bit, I find that the old...
Not you, me.
Oh.
What was your diagnosis?
Oh, that! Well, Chalmers, when I examined you with my stethoscope, I'm afraid I found something rather serious. Mr. Chalmers, your heart doesn't beat.
What does it do?
It buzzes.
Buzzes?
Like that. A sort of intermittent, high-pitched buzz. Do you realize what this means?
I'm engaged.
It means, young man, that you've got buzzing heart. Or to put it into layman's language, heart buzzing.
Is that rare?
It's unknown.
Can you cure me?
To be frank, I don't know. But I'll certainly have a long and expensive try.
No, that's not the way I want it. What I'd prefer to do is draw out my savings and spend the money on one last mad fling. Somewhere where there's excitement and gaiety and beautiful women.
Excitement, gaiety and beautiful women, eh?
Why not? You can't take it with you.
That's true. But you can take me with you.
You?
Well, you'll need a medical man in attendance. You don't want to buzz off on your own.
Yes, but look here.
No arguing with the doctor, please. Now, there's only one place where my society patients flock at this time of the year. Do you know Sam Moritz?
Sam who?
It's not a who, it's a where. A winter sports resort. An alpine playground where sparkling sun and crisp snow combine to make an absolute paradise in which to break a leg.
Oh, it's what I've always dreamed of. Fun and games round the Jungfrau.
And the younger the Frau, the funnier the game.
Splendid, I'd book 2 return tickets right away.
2 returns?
Oh, 1 for you and 1... One return, 1 single.
That's the ticket. I'll pack a couple of woolly sweaters and then it's all abroad for the ski lark. Two days later, I was sitting on the terrace of a 5-story luxury hotel, watching the gaily clad figures speeding down the snowy slopes. I don't ski myself because of my old trouble, cowardice. But young David had taken to it avidly. He came to my table now, his face flushed and glowing.
Did you see me, Doctor? I did a slalom behind the fir trees.
Oh, very continental. But you must go carefully. I don't want you to overdo things and cut short my holiday. Are you sure you're feeling all right?
Oh, never better. Only bad moment I've had was that sudden crippling pain last night.
That was your own fault. I warned you about trying to get into a telephone box with skis on. By the way, who were you telephoning?
Oh, somebody.
Unusual. It was a girl, wasn't it? No use denying it. I can see by your expression. Your neck's gone mauve and the bobble on your ski cap is wobbling.
Yes, it was a girl. Her name is Deirdre. Deirdre Evershot Jupp.
Not the Deirdre Evershot Jupp.
Well, I doubt whether there are two.
But she's notorious. A beautiful, wild society girl, always hitting the front pages with her escapades. No wonder you're bobble wobbled. She's a right bobble wobbler, that one.
Oh, I say, here she is, coming towards our table now.
Oh, look. There's that dishy man again. Hello, David. I say, you look even more glam the right way up.
Oh. Hello, Deirdre. This is Dr. Pickering.
How do you do?
Oh, Dr. Pickering. Oh, yes, of course.
Won't you sit among us?
Oh.
Please do, Deirdre. Would you like some hot chocolate?
Oh, love some.
I'll break you off a bit. I've been carrying it round in my hip pocket. I say, Deirdre, you will come dancing with me tonight, won't you?
Well, actually, Poppet, I'm having dinner with my fiancé, Carlos, because he wants me to meet Gloria, who's his ex-wife, who's bringing along her boyfriend, Alexis, who'll be with his wife, who's a model girl called Tanya, who was the one Gloria cited when she divorced Carlos. Won't you join us?
No, I don't think so. Not if it's all family.
Oh, cherub. Don't give me that lost puppy dog look. I will go dancing with you. That other lot are a pretty septic crew of drowse anyway.
Wonderful, dear. Shall we say nine?
Well, you can. When I'm in Switzerland, I never say nine to anything. I'll be the same, you sweet ready-made thing.
After that, they were seen everywhere together. I was uneasy about it, and my fears were soon justified.
Doctor, we wanted you to be the first to know. Last night, David and I became engaged.
Oh, my word. Engaged? But I thought you were already engaged to Carlos.
Oh, him. Well, I was going to break it off with him this morning anyway.
Why?
Last night, he married Gloria again. Oh, Doctor, it's going to be blissful with David, I know. It's going to be one of those always and always things.
Is it? David, have you told Deirdre about...
About what?
You know,
Oh, Poppet, I've known about the birds and the bees since I was six.
Deirdre, this is something rather different.
Oh, really? Whisper it, David.
Deirdre, I should have told you, I know, but I've been so happy I forgot all about it. Deirdre, I am not long for this world.
Oh, you're long enough, David. I mean, everybody looks squat in thick woolies.
I mean, Oh, Doctor, you tell her.
I'll do better than that. I'll show her. You see this stethoscope, Deirdre?
Yes.
Well, I placed the cold bit against his chest, so... Now, Deirdre, you have a listen through the ear bits. What can you hear?
A sort of buzzing. Oh, David, how clever of you. But if it's Morse, I'm afraid they didn't teach us that at my finishing school. Only the gay Gordons and unarmed combat. What does it mean?
It means goodbye, Deirdre.
Goodbye? David, where are you going? David, come back! David, come back!
He stumbled blindly out from the terrace, across the putting green, and straight up Mont Blanc. I moved on an impulse to follow him, but a sudden snow blizzard sprang up and blotted him from sight. Hastily, I organized a search party, and at 3 o'clock that morning, Deirdre and I were trudging across the glacier with two alpine guides and a St. Bernard.
David! David, where are you? Fritz, can you see him?
No. No.
This must be the tallest St. Bernard I've ever seen. Honestly, a fat lot of good that St. Bernard is. He's walked all the way up here on three legs.
Why?
He's been trying to open the brandy barrel with the other. We'll have to give up, Deirdre. We'll never find David now. Poor devil. Perhaps it's better this way.
Oh, doctor.
There, there. I'll just sit on this mound of snow and get my breath back. Then we'll find our way back to the hotel. You find your own way back, you boozy hound. Look at him now. Trying to bite the seat of my trousers now. Get away! Get away! I can't stand dogs that get aggressive when they've had a few.
Oh, no. No, it's not you. It's that mound of snow you're sitting on. Doctor.
What?
It's not a mound.
Huh?
It's David.
What? Quick, help me dig the snow away. He's frozen stiff. Fritz, the brandy barrel. Oh. Stop the lot. I'll have him drummed out of the tail waggers for this.
Oh, never mind him. Attend to David. Oh, he's so cold. Oh, doctor, is he still alive?
Where's my stethoscope? Now, let me put it to his chest. Yes, he's all right. His heart is beating strongly.
Where am I? Mother!
That's for St. Bernard, darling. Don't try and move, David. You'll be all right. Doctor says your heart is Doctor! Did you say beating?
Yes, I listened to it through my stethoscope. By Jove, I see what you're getting at. Let me have another listen. Yes, it is beating. Gadoink, gadoink, gadoink. Healthy as anything.
Oh, David, you're not buzzing anymore.
Not, doctor, am I better? Is it possible?
It's not possible, but it's happened. Something has worked a miracle when medical science was helpless.
It was love.
Yes, true love. For when I first sounded your chest and heard that strange buzzing, there were two things that I didn't know, but now realize. One, the power of love.
And two,
there was a blue bottle up my stethoscope.
Please, come along now, Mr. Glum. Last drink, Here, Mr. Glum. How's your son's wedding arrangements proceeding, eh?
Like an arse on fire, Ted.
Really?
Yes. You ever seen an arse on fire?
No.
Chaos and panic in all directions.
Ah.
Called in half a nerve-wracking period, Ted. The only cheerful thing I can say about it is that it's driving me to drink.
Oh.
Give us another brown in there, will you?
All right. It's the, it's the women, I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, of course, F. Well, I mean, F. She's in a rare old tiz. In fact, so much so that last Thursday... No, I'll have another brown and go back further.
Oh, good.
Last Tuesday...
Tuesday.
There was F in our front parlour, strung up like a tennis racket.
Get married without all this fuss and palaver. This latest drama about who's going to be bridesmaids. Aunt Hetty's terribly offended because I'm not having more rain.
Oh. How much rain are you having?
Well, Maureen's her little daughter. Little. Ha, ha.
Ha, ha. What are we laughing at, eh?
Ron, that Maureen is 14 stone, Ron. What do I want her clumping down the aisle behind me for? But I'm only the bride. I've got no say. Whose day is it? That's what I want to know. Whose day is it?
St. Swithin's.
Oh, mine, Ron, mine. Oh, honestly, they got me so worked up. I didn't sleep a wink last night.
Neither did I. I didn't even get into bed. Just stood in my dressing gown all night and thought.
Oh, you were worried too, dearest.
No, Eth, my dressing gown tassel was caught in the wardrobe drawer.
Ron, why didn't you just take your dressing gown off?
Well, I'll be blowed. Of course.
Oh, dear. I can see you're just as on edge as I am. Oh, honestly, it's as though the wedding doesn't concern us anymore. It's just other people.
Oh, Eth, you've just got yourself into a state.
Yes.
Don't think about it. Look, I'll amuse you. I'll make you laugh. Look, I'll stick my tongue through the hole in my mint with a hole in it.
Oh, Ron, Peter. I wish I could have your gift for adapting yourself to circumstances. But I've gotten into such a state of nerves, I just don't care anymore. I just don't care anymore.
Oh, don't cry. Please don't cry. You'll make my fountain pen clip go rusty.
Hello. Oh, lummy, not again. Whenever I come in, you two are either having a good cry or a good try. Well, if you can cheer up, because I've been working on the list of guests for the wedding. You'll be glad to know that I've managed to whittle it down to a reasonable 42. Oh,
well, that's one blessing. My mother couldn't get it lower than 212.
Well, it's nonsense. You leave these things to me. Look at the list here. Look, see? I've knocked them off for a start. And them. And we can do well without them and them. They're out. And them. These are expendable here. And them and them and them. And them, you see, it's easy. You just whittle them out, you see.
But, Mr. Glum, it's my whole family.
Oh, then we are a bit snookered, aren't we? Because I'm not having none of my family struck off.
Oh, and my family won't have any of their family struck off. And so it goes on and on and on. And I'm just fed up with it. Why can't Ron and me just have a quiet wedding?
Because you can't, that's why not. The whole affair is a chance for Ron's family and your family to get together and talk.
Dad, our family don't even talk to each other.
Well, they will with a common enemy. Ethel, I can see what it is. All you're suffering from is what they call the prenuptial trembles.
No, Mr. Cummings, it's worse.
Is it?
Yes, we don't want all this fuss. What Ron and me should do now, if we had any sense, is elope, right now.
Elope? I should, Coco. What? After all the invitations have been posted, and I've put the announcement in the Greyhound Express? Oh, no. You face your responsibilities. You can put that eloping idea right out of your head.
But who wants all this expense? Is my father spending all his savings on bridesmaids' dresses and expensive catering and a red toast master? And you paying out for posh hire cars?
Please, don't you see? It's a parent's privilege to spend his money on... Who pays out for the hire cars?
You do, Mr. Glum. Groom's father always pays for the cars.
Oh, does he? Well, perhaps we should re-examine this question of eloping. Ron, what do you think on the subject? For once in your life, let's have an intelligent opinion.
Well, Dad, I think that...
Hey!
Oh, I'm sorry, Dad. I got my tongue stuck in me mint hole. What I wanted to say was, we tried eloping last year, Dad, and it didn't work.
And why didn't it work? Why? May I ask you why? Because it wasn't organized proper. But with a master planner like me behind the operation, that'd be a horse of a different feather.
Oh, you mean you'd really help us to elope, Mr. Glum? Or perhaps you could get a car to drive us to Gretna Green?
Yes, the whole point of eloping is for you to avoid hiring cars. Now, let me put my thinking cap on.
So, it was you who actually devised the old elopement plan, eh, Mr. Glum?
Well, Ted, whatever plan it was, it had to be absolutely Ron-proof.
I see that.
Which is the same as foolproof, only double strength.
Yeah.
What I conceived was that the first dark night, we'd take a lad around to S house, lean it against her window, throw up a pebble, and then down she comes. They'd get on my motorbike and hey-ho for Gretna Green.
Cool. That's brilliant, Mr. Clum.
Thank you, Chet. However, we set the date for the next Tuesday, and at 1900 hours, we assembled in my front parlour for final briefing.
Oh, Ron. This time tomorrow morning, we'll be man and wife. We'll be having breakfast off the same tray. Oh, Ron.
Oh, eh?
Just two lovebirds.
I'd rather have kippers.
All right, you two, wrench your mind back to practical matters. Now, you'll need this road map, Ron. It's a long way from here to Scotland.
Mr. Glum, this is a road map of Devon.
Is it? Oh, blast. I had to take it with my hands behind me because the man was looking. Never mind, have it just the same. If you pass through any of the places mentioned on it, you know you're on the wrong road. Now, repeat back your orders.
Yes, right. Well, I go to bed at 10 as normal, but I lie awake and wait till my mother's snoring settles down to a steady note.
Sit.
Then I dress silently, put all my necessities in a suitcase, and wait quietly by the window for Ron's pebble.
That's good. That's very good. Quarter to two precisely, Ron. You and me arrive with a ladder and a pebble. And what do?
I lean the pebble up against the wall and throw the ladder at Eth's window.
Ron, the other way round.
Oh, yes. I turn the ladder the other way round
and
lean the pebble.
All right, Ron, all right.
No?
Don't strain yourself over. You'll weaken yourself before the journey starts.
Oh.
I'll be with you anyway. Now, you get off home now, Eth, because we're working this to split-second time.
Yes, all right, then. Well, goodbye, dearest. I'll be ready a quarter to two, precisely.
Heaven's sake, come on, Ron. We're 2 1/4 hours late already.
It's not my fault, Dad.
It is your fault. If you hadn't lent the ladder against that trolley bus, we wouldn't have had to run all the way to the depot to get it back. Now, come on, walk a bit faster.
I can't walk faster, Dad. I'm carrying too much.
Well, whose fault is that? Whose fault is it? You would insist on bringing your bagatelle. You won't be told, will you? What do you need with a bagatelle board on your honeymoon? I'll never... Oh, I don't know, though. I must say, I'd be a lot happier if I knew where your mother's got to. You'll be stuck if she don't turn up.
What's she carrying?
The motorbike. Oh. You daren't ride it because of the noise. Wish they'd left some street lights on in this road. I can't see it. Wait a minute. I think we're here. This is... She's number 23, isn't she?
Yes, at 23 Tozer Avenue.
Well, let's go in. Come on. Very quiet now. Can you see Eth up at the window, Ron? Ron, can you see her? Ron! Oh. Ron! Poor laddie. He's never been up this late before. Wake up, you're on your way to your wedding.
Oh.
Now then, lean the ladder against the wall. Quietly now. Easy does it. Now, Ron, the pebble.
Pebble?
Yes, come on, the pebble.
The pebble?
Don't just stand there saying the pebble, throw it.
Dad, I haven't got it. I left it on the mantelpiece.
Oh, you're a right specimen of eager young lover, aren't you? Talk about young Lochinvar has come out of his vest. Well, nip straight up the ladder and tap on the window.
Right-o, Dad, won't be long.
Off you go. Cool. And half a parky night for this sort of lark. Ron, you up there yet?
No, Dad. I can't go any further.
Why not?
I've gone dizzy.
You're only on the first rung. Oh, step off it. I'll go up. Stand by, Ed. Par glum on the way up. Here we are, Ed. Ed. Ron.
Yes, Dad?
I can't see her. I'll climb inside and scout round.
Righto, Dad. Oh, Britannia. Britannia, cha cha cha. Dad, come down. It's dark.
Ron!
Dad, something's saying, Ron.
Ron, it's me.
Hello, Ed.
Ron, this is the wrong house.
No, it isn't, Beth. It's 23.
Yes, I know, but it's the wrong road. 23 Tozer Crescent, not Avenue.
Oh.
Oh, Ron, I waited and waited, and then I came out and walked round the street looking for you. This house, Ron, this is where that awful Rosie Wilson lives. That barmaid at Mr. Ted's pub. And that's her sitting room.
Oh, I'd better let Dad know. Dad, come down quickly.
Not lightly.
What do you mean?
Take the ladder away, Ron. I'm all right.
Ira Rabinowitz and BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley, Professor Jimmy Edwards, and June Whitfield, encouraged by Wallace Eaton and the Keynotes. Frank Muir and Dennis Norton wrote the script. The program was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and...